All right, so Hebrews chapter 11, and tonight we're going to start at verse number 8. We've considered in this chapter many examples, demonstrations of faith, a life of faith, how to live by faith. We, of course, know the importance of faith. Verse 6 reminds us that without faith, it is impossible to please God. And so, there's people who would say to me, I don't believe. I don't believe in God. I don't believe in Christ. I don't believe the Bible. Well, if that's the case, then you will not please God. And you cannot be saved. You cannot go to heaven without faith. We're saved by faith. And so it's very important. It's a very important subject. Not only are we saved by faith, but as we walk in this world on our journey to heaven, as we live our lives, we're to live a life of faith. And again, that's how we please God, is by living out a life of faith. And so this chapter gives us examples of those who live their life by faith. We're going to read about the example tonight of Abraham. I want you to look with me at verse number 8. It says, "By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whether he went. By faith, he sojourned in a land of promise, and in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God." Jump down to verse 13, where it says, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city." And we can stop at that point. Let's have a word of prayer together, and then I'll share some thoughts with you from these verses. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for this scripture. And Lord, I see in this example from Abraham some principles of faith that I think we need to apply in our lives still today. And Lord, that you would help us to see that and to apply it. I just ask that you would fill me with your Spirit, that you would grant your grace to me to be able to preach this message, that you would use it and take it to our hearts, and Lord, help us to increase our faith. And I just ask that you would have your way now, Lord, that you would, the service is yours, this time is yours, we give it to you, and we desire that you would use it for your glory and for our benefit. For all of that, we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. There's a couple thoughts come to mind quickly as I read these verses. Of course, we think about Abraham. Abraham sometimes called the father of faith. Not that he is the originator, you know. We've already looked at people who lived before Abraham and were people of faith. Matter of fact, even the first man, Adam, was a man, I believe, of faith. But we saw his son Abel live by faith. We saw Enoch walk by faith. We saw Noah worked by faith. And so people who had faith, obviously, long before Abraham lived. But God did a special work in the life of this man, Abraham. And he promised him a great seed, if you will, a descendants. He promised that from him would come forth the nation of Israel, and he promised that even all the world through him would be blessed. And so when you come to the New Testament, I won't take time to, I've been reading in my daily devotions in Galatians. And in Galatians chapter 3, there's a verse that says that they, therefore, that are of faith are the children of Abraham. Some would remember back in their Sunday school days when we used to all gather upstairs and sing. We haven't done that in many years. But we used to gather upstairs and we'd sing these little Sunday school songs. And one of the songs we would sing was Father Abraham. That's right. Father Abraham has many sons. Many sons have Father Abraham. And I am one of them, and so are you. And, you know, of course, the Jews, they count themselves as children of Abraham simply because of their heritage, their bloodline. Born, you know, as a child from Isaac and Jacob and you know, the tribes of Judah, or tribes of Jacob, I guess. But, you know, God said to them, you know, you might be of the bloodline of Abraham, but it's really the children of faith that are counted as the children of Abraham. Because those who have faith are like Abraham. Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. And so Abraham's called the father of faith. Another thing I think about when I was reading this was, it kind of, I think for the first time, kind of struck me. I've studied this chapter, I've preached through this chapter on, I don't know, numerous occasions. But this time I was struck by the thought that I was thinking about Abraham and how Abraham, you know, we read where it told us, where was it, where it said that verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. In other words, you know, Abraham lived in this land that he would inherit, but yet when he died, it still really wasn't his. You know, he lived in a tent. He dwelled in the tent the whole time. Abraham was a pilgrim. Someone said one time that a vagabond is somebody who has no home. A refugee is somebody who's fleeing their home. A stranger is somebody looking for a home, and a pilgrim is somebody that's going home. They're on their way home. Abraham was on his way to a home. And he had promises about the land of Israel, the land of Canaan, and God would fulfill that later on to the nation of Israel, but many, many years later. Abraham was a pilgrim and a stranger in that land. He was always in a tent. You know, Abraham was a wealthy man. I mean, he had servants. You remember when Sodom, I'll talk about this a little later too, when his nephew Lot was in Sodom and the kings, there was a confederacy of kings who came and they conquered some of the other cities. One of them was Sodom, and they carried away the people as prisoners of war, and they took all the loot and all of those things from Sodom. And Abraham gathered his servants, I think it says 300 of them, and they went as an army, and they caught up to these kings that were kind of marauders, you know, they were going around taking over land, and he beat them and brought the people of Sodom and all the stuff back. Which kind of tells you that, you know, he had, and I think about another thing that gives us an indication that Abraham was a wealthy man. You know, the reason why Lot, well, there's a lot of reasons, I guess, why Lot went to Sodom, but remember how it started. Abraham had many herds and flocks, and he had a large, what would you call it? A large bunch of animals. Yeah, he just had, you know, all these things. And Lot also has his nephew. He had amassed quite a flock of his own. And there were so many, they couldn't dwell all in the same land. And so Abraham said, look, you know, your servants and your herdsmen are coming into conflict with mine. We got to spread out a little bit. And he said to Lot, you choose which way you want to go. If you go to the right hand, I'll go to the left. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. So Abraham had lots of material things. He could have definitely built a house. Couldn't he have? But he lived in a tent. Because all the time he realized that he was a pilgrim. He kind of, that was a statement, I think, that, hey, this world is not my home. I'm not putting down a foundation here. I'm still on a journey. And that's why it says, they looked for a country. In verse 16, they desired a better country. That is a heavenly. And so, you know, when he, gave his will, you know, when he died, and in his will it said to Isaac, Isaac, I being of sound mind and body, leave to you a tent. That's what Isaac inherited, a tent. And Isaac dwelled in tents. Jacob dwelled in tents. All that is to say that they were pilgrims and strangers in this land. And you know, in like manner spiritually, we are pilgrims and strangers in this world. Because just like Abraham, this world is not our home. This isn't really our final destination. This is not where our citizenship lies. We have a hope of something much better. I quoted for you this morning a verse you already know out of John 14 where Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions. I go and prepare a place for you. The Lord's preparing a home for you. Not a tent, but a mansion. And that's where we're headed. That's where we're traveling to. Now, what was it that... So I started all that when I had this thought I was starting to say was that I see in the example of Abraham, and then I realized, hey, it was the same thing you could see in the other ones, is an example of endurance. When you read about Abraham, you think about, you know, he endured a long time in this land as a pilgrim and waiting on the promise. He endured a long time for a son. God had promised him a son. And yet he was 100 years old when he had that son. He endured a long time as a pilgrim. You know, pilgrim life, living in a tent, is not an easy life. Certainly he could have, you know, he probably in his flesh would have desired to build a more comfortable house, to not have to travel around and dig wells and so on. No doubt that would have been, you know, just like all of us, we enjoy the comforts of home. Abraham certainly knew about those things. I'll talk to you in a minute about Ur, where he left. But he endured. He endured many things. And so here's the thought I want you to think about as we give you this outline tonight. What was it that kept him going? What was it that kept him enduring all of these things? What is it that keeps us going? Well, I'm going to share with you an outline that I got from a commentary that a commentator I enjoy named Warren Wiersbe. Wiersbe said this. He said, Abraham, like all of us, had three cities in his life. Three cities that I think we can relate to spiritually. He had a city behind him. I'll just tell you what the outline is right away. He had a city behind him, he had a city around him, and he had a city before him. All right, so that's what I want you to think about. Abraham had a city behind him. Now, back at verse 8, it says, by faith, when Abraham was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance. So where was he going out from? He was called to leave and to go into a place, but he was already in a place, right? Where was the place he was in? Well, he was in a place called Ur. It's a nice town because it's easy to spell. It's only two letters. U-R. Ur. Ur of the Chaldees. It was in the Chaldean area. It was really in Mesopotamia. It was a place around, I don't know exactly on the map where it would be today. I guess it would be somewhere maybe in Iraq or in that part of the world, which really was the you know, around the Euphrates River. It was the center of civilization. It really was, it was probably in the days all the way back in Genesis chapter 12. It would have been where it was the center of, like I say, the center of civilization. It was in that region where even the Garden of Eden was. It was in that region where society began. That's where probably Noah lived around that part of the world. And so Ur would have been I know it sounds funny to call it a modern city when it was so long ago, but in that day it was the modern city. It had all the comforts of the modern cities. And I know that sometimes we think, well, you know, of course, way back then they didn't have what we have today, and that's true. They didn't have electric lights and, you know, forced heat and central air and all those kind of things. But, you know, if you read about those ancient societies, they're not as primitive as you might be led to believe. As a matter of fact, some of them had extremely fancy and what you might call comfortable. They had running water in many of the places. It was a happening place. It would have been a comfortable place. To leave that land and to go off to this place in Canaan would have been like, you know, perhaps, you know, if you were one of the, like we used to say in back in America, the settlers. You know, the settlers, they would travel out west. Go west, young man. And, you know, they were back in Philadelphia, New York, the big cities, even St. Louis. And they would leave in these wagon trains and head off on the Oregon Trail into the frontier, you know, out into the, this place, this kind of country, which was very unsettled. It's still a little bit frontierish out here in the west, you know. But so Abraham was like that. He was going, and it's interesting, it says that he was called to go out to a place, and it didn't tell him really where that place was. It didn't tell him, you know, what it was like, who was there. And be honest, if your husband, if you were Sarah, I know men, that's hard for you to think about, but if you were, you know, if your husband came home and said, honey, we're moving. Well, where are we moving to? Well, I don't exactly know, but you know, we're moving out to this area, and God's told me I'm to go. You would want to know some things. You'd have some questions, wouldn't you? You'd say, well, where is this place, and what is it like, and what do they speak, and how do we know how to get there? I mean, we don't have a map. You know, you would want to Google it. You would want to read about it. You'd want to, you'd want to research it. But they didn't have that luxury. It was definitely a step of faith. That's why it says, by faith, when Abraham was called to go, he obeyed. Does that take faith? Sure, it does. And he had to leave behind. He had to leave behind Ur. He was to leave behind his family other than Sarah. Now, he didn't exactly... he obeyed and he went, but he's like us. God tells us to take big steps, and we take baby steps many times. He took with him his father, Terran. He took with him Lot, his nephew. And he went to a place called Haran, and there he hung out for a little bit until his dad died and buried him, and then he came into what we call the Promised Land. Now, I don't fault Abraham. Like I say, sometimes I don't easily take big steps. So he brought some people with him, but you know, it cost him some time and a little bit of trouble. Lot cost him some trouble. He should have left it all behind, but he was to go on and to not look back. Here's the thing. I say all of us have a city behind us. Just like with Abraham, God came to him and said, I want you to leave. And I got a new place for you to go. There was a time in your life when God said, you know, you're to leave behind that old life. right? When you get saved, you're called onto a journey to a new place. What, you know, forgetting those things which are behind. And we're not to look back. Remember when Lot came out of Sodom, his wife looked back. And we know what happened to her, right? She turned into a pillar of salt. But we're all tempted to look back. That's why it tells you down in, where is it, verse 15. Truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to return. What does that mean, if they had been mindful of that? Well, if they kept looking back, if they kept thinking, like, you know, when Israel came out of Egypt and they traveled out of there in the wilderness, and every time it got difficult, what did they say? They said, you know, we should have never left Egypt. How about we go back to Egypt? And I'm sure there was times when Sarah might have said to Abraham, hey, we should have never left Ur. What are we doing out here in this wilderness west? Actually, they had gone east, but anyway. No, they would have went west. You're right, it is west. Anyway, but you know, if they had been mindful, if they had continually been looking back, if they had kept their thoughts about, boy, what did we, remember that bed we had in Ur? Remember those the markets and all the food we had in Ur, remember all those things? If that was what they kept their eyes on, they may have wanted to go back. But that's not where he kept his eyes, was not looking back. And you know, it's the same for you and I. Sometimes we get saved and we start down the road of the Christian life. And there's a temptation to look back and say, boy, you know, I remember some of the fun times we had back then. And you might be tempted to go back. But don't go back. We're to go forward. Whenever the hard times hit for the Christian, it's not time to retreat. It's not time to go back. It's time to go forward and trust God. So there was a city behind him. Now, there was also a city around him. And that was the city of Sodom. When it comes to Sodom, we know what Sodom was like. The Bible said it was a very wicked city, filled with all manner of evil and sinful behavior. So much so that God rained fire and brimstone upon it and destroyed it. Now, what was Abraham's relationship to the city around him? Well, first of all, he was separated from it. That's why he didn't, you know, he lived in the tent. He didn't move into Sodom. His nephew Lot did. We know what happened to that. When Lot moved into Sodom, boy, that's where he got himself into big problems. And I won't go through the whole story, but in the end, he lost everything. He lost his family. He lost his wife. He lost his integrity. He lost his witness. He lost his morality. Lot really suffered by settling down in Sodom. Now, Abraham never did. Abraham did not. He was separated from the city around him. And again, as a Christian, you and I today are called to leave behind, those things are behind, and we still live in this world where around us is all of these things, but we're not to be of this world. We are in the world, but not of the world. Right? James said that friendship with the world is what? Do you remember? It's enmity with God. James 4:4. He says, don't be a friend of the world. When you get friendly with the world, then you know, you're apt to get spotted by the world. That's what James says. He said, pure religion and undefiled is to, you know, to keep yourself from, to visit widows and orphans and to keep yourself from being spotted by the world. When we get friendly with the world, we get the world's defilements on us. We get spotted. We get, you know, because it's easy to, it's just easy to be sucked back into sin when you're getting too close to the world. That's why in John, 1 John 2, he says, love not the world, right? Neither the things that are in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. And so we're not to love the world. If we become friends with the world, we get spotted by the world, and pretty soon we fall in love with the world, and then, like in Romans 12, he says, be not conformed to this world. And so, by faith, if we're to continue on, we walk by faith, not by sight. We don't settle down in this world. We separate from it. But separation doesn't mean isolation. We don't go off and live in a monastery somewhere. I told you the story about Sodom and how Abraham had to rescue them. Abraham didn't settle down in Sodom. He had really nothing to do with the sinful practices of Sodom. But yet when Sodom was in trouble, he ministered to them. He helped them. And I think there's a lesson there. We're to be a blessing to the world around us. We don't have to be of it to be a blessing, to minister to it. That's why when Abraham took his soldiers, his servants, and rescued them, he brought them back. And then he was bringing back all the people of Sodom and the spoils. And the king of Sodom came out and said to Abraham, thank you. And as a way of thanking you, here, I'll give you, just let us have the people. You can take all the spoils to yourself. What was Abraham's response? Do you remember? Abraham said, no, I didn't do it for the money. I didn't do it for the pay. I'm not, he said, I wouldn't take a shoelace. Because if I do, I'll get spotted by the world. You'll say that I owe you something. And so he didn't take anything from them. He simply did good to them for free, because he wasn't doing it for them, he was doing it for God. And so he was a servant to him, to the world. And then when God came to Abraham and said, there was some angels with him, and he said, I'm going to destroy Sodom. Do you remember what Abraham did? He prayed. He prayed for them. He said, Lord, if there, would you destroy the righteous with the wicked? If there's 10 righteous, he started at 50 and he went all the way to 10. If there's 10 righteous, and God said, no, I would spare the city. And I would imagine Abraham, kind of did a little calculation. When he got down to 10, he thought, well, there's Lot and there's Mrs. Lot. And he has two unmarried daughters and he has two married daughters. And, so that means their husbands. And if they'd just got a couple more people saved, well, surely that would be enough, 10 people. But, there wasn't 10 people. Because Lot's testimony had been ruined. When Lot went to his sons-in-law and said, we got to get out of here, God's going to destroy this city, they laughed at him. They mocked him and said, you're crazy. We don't believe in God, and we don't believe God's going to do anything. Well, what we see from Abraham is he had a city behind him, and he endured not looking back, not being drawn back into it. He had a city around him, and he didn't get spotted by it, but he served. He was a minister. He was a witness. He prayed for them. He interceded for them. And that's what we do. In Jeremiah, just finished reading Jeremiah, I'm in Ezekiel now. But Jeremiah was telling the people of Israel they were going to go into captivity into Babylon. And he said, when you get there, what are you to do? What were you to be? You're prisoners of war. When you're in the military, a prisoner of war, it's your duty to try to escape. But Jeremiah didn't tell him that. He said, don't try to escape. He said, plant some gardens, build your house, and just be good. Do good. Be a good witness. Serve the Lord, and let the Babylonians observe what God's people should be like. Just do good. Be salt and light. And by faith, that's how we're to live in this world. Well, he had a city behind him, he had a city around him, and he had a city before him. And that city, of course, had builders, foundations whose builder and maker is God. That's the city, that's what kept him going. That's what kept Abraham on this pilgrimage. That's why he could live in a tent and not get discouraged. Because he said, I'm not going back to Ur. That's all behind me. I've forgotten things that are behind. I'm pressing on toward things that are before me. I'm not going to go over here and live in Sodom. That's not where my home is. I'm still heading to another city. The city of heaven. And that's obviously the example there. You know, it's pretty clear. I preached about this morning. If you weren't in the service this morning, you can get the tape. Actually, no, we don't have tapes, but you can see it online or listen to the podcast. But we talked about Christ warned his disciples that he was going away, but he was going to come back. And when he comes back, they needed to be still pilgrims of faith, waiting and looking for the return of Christ. And when he comes back, he's going to take us to be with him, that where he is, there we may be also. And that's the city that we look forward to. Let's turn to 1 John chapter 3 and we'll close. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 1. In 1 John 3 verse 1 it says, behold. Whenever you read the word behold, that means, you know, look. Look at this. There's something to pay attention to. And usually it's sort of a, you know, it's a strong term. It means, you know, I say look, but where, you know, you ever go down the road where sometimes my wife and I are driving and I say, hey, look. But she's driving, so she doesn't look. And then finally she gets a second to look and she said, what? And I said, well, you're too late now. You can't see it. It's already gone. You got to look when I say look, you know. But maybe that wouldn't be very safe. But behold. Well, what are we to behold? He says, behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed on us. What manner means, you know, what type of love? Behold, think about it, this amazing love. How does this love, you know, displayed to us? He says this, that we should be called the sons of God. Now that should amaze you. That you get to be a son of God, a child of God, because of the love of God. Now, I don't know if that amazes you, but it amazes me to say, behold, look at this love. God would let Tom Klein be his child. That's incredible. And he says, therefore, the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. The world doesn't understand these things. They don't get us. They don't quite figure out why, you know, why are you a pilgrim? Well, these people living in tents, that's weird. Why would they do that? Well, they don't get it. But we do. And then verse 2, he says, beloved, now, not later, but now are we the sons of God. And even though it is now, there's more yet to come. He says, it doth not yet appear what we shall be. You don't know what you're going to be like exactly when you get to heaven, do you? Are you going to have gray hair, or is it going to go back to what it was before? Are you going to have hair that you don't have now? I mean, you know, what's it going to be like? I don't have these glasses, I don't think. I haven't got used to them anyway. Have you ever thought about, you know, what age you'll look like in heaven? I don't know. I don't know whether you'll be 13 or 42 or you'll be eternal. He says, it doth not yet appear what you shall be. But here's the good news. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him. Wow. For we shall see him as he is. We're going to be like the Lord. What does that mean? Well, we will be in an eternal body. No more sickness. No more bifocals and fillings in your teeth and, you know, joint pains and none of those things. No more death. We're going to be like the Lord. No more sin nature. Now, that's probably the best part of heaven in some sense, is that I will no longer have to contend with this old nature that wants to sin. There won't be temptations. There won't be all those things. That'll be gone. That'll be something of the past. He says, verse 3, "And every man that hath this hope," is that the hope you have? "Every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure." In other words, if you know you're going to be like the Lord when you get there, you kind of want to do some preparation now, right? You want to purify yourself now. Isn't that true? There's some folks here that, you know, you're not a native of Canada. I grew up in the United States. Some grew up in South Korea, some in the Ukraine and Russia and Germany and Peru. And you know, when you came to Canada, just like I said, you want to kind of look up, you probably started learning some English, probably began to try to learn some things about Canada. And maybe even before you ever got here, you began to practice living a little bit like a Canadian, you know, because you want to fit in. And before I get to heaven, I want to practice being a citizen of heaven. I want to live like, you know, I'm going to live there one day anyway. I want to live like a citizen of heaven here. Wouldn't that make sense? Sure. And because I have a hope, I have a faith, I know I'm going to go there. God's made me his child, and one day he's going to take me there. And as much as I possibly can, by the grace of God, I want to purify myself now, live a life, a holy life, a life that pleases heaven, that will fit into heaven. Not because I can, you know, become worthy of it, just because God saved me and I want to be like him. So in other words, what I'm saying is, when you don't look back at this, you know, the old city, you don't look at the city around you, but you keep your eyes on the city to come, you want to just live more like the citizens of that city. And that's how Abraham kept going. That's how he kept journeying. C.S. Lewis said, if you read history, the Christians who did the most for this world were the ones who thought the most about the world to come. If you keep your eyes on heaven, you'll be a better citizen even of this world, because you can help others to learn how to get there, to go with you in that journey. Well, let's stand and we'll have prayer together.